Blog Talk Radio.
Joined, of course, again, as always, by our co-host, Mike Mastrolio. How's it going, Mike?
Well, it's going as well as it can, barring technical difficulties here.
Yeah, Mike's a little frustrated this morning. having some issues with the Blog Talk Radio. But hey, it happens. And, of course, I thought you were
Wegmans. Our sponsor's Blog Talk Radio.
Right. unfortunately, he's being asked to click a button that does not appear on his screen, and it's all really, really bad. But if you ask Dean Blandino, he'll tell you it's fine. So you're setting up for a party, you said today.
Yeah, we're having a Star Wars themed Christmas party amongst friends and family.
Rock on! That is awesome.
Awakens.
That seems like a rather big endeavor.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, awesome.
Cookies, you know, my wife's putting together a little Sarlacc pit of apple crisp.
No, you know, it's funny. I made pineapple cream cheese cobbler the other day. But this is not a baking show, so we're not going to do baking. We're going to do NFL football week 13. Good Lord. All right, so here we go. Before we get started and get into this too much, I want to remind you that if you're looking for professional financial advice regarding retirement planning, investments, and life insurance, you should contact Matt Covendo and receive a complimentary planning analysis. Call Matt today at 315-671-1864, and he'll hook you up for your financial future. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the number to call is area code 347-637-2812. We'd love to have you on the air. We'd love to answer your questions. We'd love to hear your opinions on whatever it is you'd like to talk about concerning the NFL. Not baking. All right. So big week this week. It's a huge week in the NFL. There's a lot of really cool matchups, and we actually already had one of those on Thursday night. The Green Bay Packers at the Detroit Lions ended in dramatic fashion. I got to admit, you know, I was doing some things. I actually had that day off, and out here in Hawaii, if you don't know how this works, the Thursday night, Monday night, Sunday night games are on in the afternoon, and usually I'm working for Monday and Thursday nights, but this week in particular I was actually off. So I was doing some things, and I got home at halftime and turned on the show and saw that it was 17-0 Detroit, and I'm like, ah, over already. Well, boy, was I wrong. Mike, what were your thoughts on that game?
I had similar thoughts. I actually turned it off to my chagrin before the Hail Mary. So,
oh, no.
I thought the game was over. And I got Heidi
Bolt. You absolutely did. I have a friend of mine out here who's a Packers fan, and he would normally stick around at work as work lets out and watch the last few minutes of the game, but it was less than 2 minutes to go. The Packers were down. He was just like, whatever. I'm just going to go home. And so on his drive home, he missed – the Rodgers Hail Mary, Rodgers to Rodgers. First of all, we'll talk about the play before it, the play preceding it in a moment. But just a great job by Aaron Rodgers. I mean, that's a long way to throw a football. I mean, they started at their own 39, and he got it all the way in the end zone. And Richard Rodgers to come down with it. And God bless you, Jim Caldwell. Why in the world isn't Calvin Johnson out there playing defense on that play? I mean, any ideas, Mike?
Well, that's hindsight being 20. Everybody on the Lions probably thought the game was over at that point. I guess you put Calvin Johnson out there, but, they call it a Hail Mary for a reason. Their prayers were answered.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard, unfortunately. You go with the tried and true knock it down, but sometimes the ball just lands in the other guy's hands. And it's unfortunate
for sure.
That it went down that way.
The only reason I bring it up is because they've used him in that capacity in the past. Because he is 6'5", 6'6", he would literally be the tallest guy back there, and he would have the best opportunity to get up. Now, that being said, maybe he doesn't get to be, you know, close enough to the ball to make a difference. But to me, I've got a guy with that kind of athletic ability and that kind of, you know, the physical traits that you just can't, you know, teach, and I would have him out there personally. So the play before that, Mike, I don't know, you probably didn't see it at the time. Have you had a chance to see it since?
I did, yeah. I know what you're talking about, the kind of phantom face mask.
Yeah, okay. It's just another in a long line of bad calls. Now, this is the thing, though. It's very similar to, we talked about last week, the pass interference call that was called on Gronkowski. Oh, we didn't talk about that yet on the air, did we? The pass interference call against Gronkowski in Denver, the offensive pass interference, and then this pass here, this play here, which ended up giving Green Bay a untimed down in which to complete their Hail Mary dreams. Both of these plays, as I looked at them, they end up being, they're not good calls. There's no way you can frame them and say that's a good call. But they both end up being like at full speed. You're like, oh, wow, yeah, that's, I can understand it. Watching at full speed, you can say, okay, I can see why the referee saw that, why it flashed to him and he, you know, threw the flag. The Aaron Rodgers one, the guy's hand basically grazes across. He never grasps. It grazes across Aaron Rodgers' face mask, and then he grabs him by the shoulder pad and brings him down. And Rodgers gets up, throws his hands up. He's got his chin strap up around his nose, whatever, you know what I mean? And he gets the call. And good for him, he got the call. The other one, Gronkowski's basically, you know, he you see his arm extend, but really what he's trying to do is he's trying to free his arm from the defender as he's trying to break towards the out, and it ended up being that one maybe not as big a play, but they're both fairly significant plays late in football games, and that's what kind of things happen. Those aren't the kind of calls that people are getting upset about, though. It's some other calls, but certainly affected the outcome of the Green Bay-Detroit game. And we'll talk about this a little bit later in the show. We've got a segment coming up in a little while called the 2015, the year of the bad call. And we're going to talk about that. And, of course, Dean Blandino has come out and said that, you know, he's defended the officiating. But we're going to get into it, and we're going to see, you know, we're going to give you our opinions on that a little later. But other than that, it was a huge game for Green Bay. They are now 8-4, as opposed to being 7-5. As they head and they go home, they're going to face Dallas next week. That probably looks like a good matchup for them. Detroit, they had an opportunity. They would have been 4-8 instead of that. I'm sorry, is that right? 4-8 or no? They would have been 5-7 instead of now they are 4-8. 5-7 in the NFC right now has you in the middle of the wild card mix. 4-8,
yeah,
not so much.
They were in the unfortunate situation of being a 4-7 team that probably needed to win the rest of its games, and you know, that's a lot to ask of a 4-7 team. I wanted to
real
quick back to what you were talking about with the calls. It's funny because you mentioned like the last two games. And the thing is, you only tend to remember the most recent ones, and it's been like every primetime game has sort of come to an end on an unsatisfactory call. 3 weeks ago, you had the Patriots against the Bills, where the Bills didn't – the guy got out of bounds with 2 seconds left, and they don't stop the clock and allow them to play another play, where they could have done what Green Bay just did, you know?
Right.
And that was, you know, unconscionable. That refereeing there was everybody watching the game. Al Michaels was going, what am I seeing right now? You know?
Exactly.
And then you got a handful of bad calls – the other direction against the Patriots the following week against Denver, where kind of taste left in your mouth at the end of the game is calls, as opposed to, wow, I just watched an overtime game between the two best teams in the AFC. That was awesome. You're going,
right.
Oh, there was an offensive pass interference, and there was a bad holding call. And, you know, it's like,
well, the unfortunate thing about that holding call, and again, we'll get into this a little bit more, the really unfortunate thing about that defensive holding call that you're talking about in the Broncos-Patriots game is, that's been called all year, like 90% of the time they will call that. And it's just –
you know what's
just
really unfortunate about that play? Is the defensive tackle made an all-timer of a play to get at Osweiler. He just trucked his guy one-on-one, ran his dude over, tackled Osweiler. Osweiler had no time that he was ever going to find anybody on that play. He was down in 2 seconds.
And a really small tug on a shoulder pad gives them a whole new set of downs goal to go. I'm with you.
That play is going to be on the defensive tackle's like career highlight reel.
Yeah, that's another thing we're going to talk about. It's not just the fact that they're missing calls and there's just some. The NFL's gotten to this point where it's some bad interpretation. But again, we'll get into that in a little bit. We're not going to get into that right now because we're going to do a whole segment on it, and I want to have stuff to talk about when we get there. Darn it. So I think the difference is, like you talked about the Bills-Patriots game and then the Patriots-Broncos game and how they kind of left you with a bad taste. I don't think that's the case with the Packers-Lions game, even though that was probably a really bad call.
Why? Just because you don't know any Lions fans? I mean, look.
I'm sure they hate it. No, maybe it's because I have Aaron Rodgers as my quarterback in fantasy football, and that was an awesome play for me, and it might actually keep me in playoff position in that league. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't hear as much about it, I guess. But maybe that's because, you know, the Lions are the Lions, and people just like, that happens to the Lions.
Right. Everybody you know that's a fan of a team in that game is probably a Packers fan, and all those people are talking about is that play to end the game. No one's going to be like, how about the BS face mask against Aaron Rodgers the play before? You know,
right.
You're going to talk about the greatness of the final play. Alliance may be dictated the other way.
Yeah, and I think even to a degree, I'm sure a lot of Lions fans are just like, us, only us, you know, and then they just kind of go on with their lives because they're just so used to stuff like that happening to them.
And the Browns, apparently.
Oh, my goodness. Only the Browns get kick-sixed, dude. I've never seen that before in my life. That is so bad. And now, we'll talk about the Browns because they're in the news this week with Austin Davis being named the starter now that Josh McCown's out for the rest of the season and then they come out a little bit later and say, well, you might not have seen the last of Johnny Manziel. This is why you're bad. Make
right.
a decision and stick to
Thanks.
It.
Thanks, sir.
Make a decision.
Sure. Now for me, I guess I look at it, my whole thing with the Manziel is you knew who he was when you drafted him. It's not like you draft, prim and proper, 4.0 student type guy that was a graduate. You drafted Johnny Manziel, who was the party king, money sign making kid, and now you're going to hate on him for being Johnny Manziel, money Manziel that you drafted, and not even give him a chance and try to see if your investments could ever pan out that you've made in this kid.
And we said that. It's a you problem. It's your fault. It's not his fault. Right. You know what he was. You basically had to wake him up off a swan in a pool in Vegas, splash some cold water, and say, hey, buddy, you just got drafted by the Browns. I mean, he was a part of the
college. I'm going to go back away and I'm the swan. Thanks a lot for the
job. If he was smart, he would have. Yeah, I mean, it's just a horrible, horrible situation out there. Make a decision and stick to it. If you're not going to play him, cut him. You know what I mean? Maybe you stick him around because you're kind of in tough straits, and if your guy gets injured, you got to have somebody to play, so you keep him around to the end of the season. But you're trying to teach this kid that you need to be stable and responsible, and then you're going, well, we're not going to play him. Well, maybe we will. Well, I don't know.
Here's
maybe
the thing,
we're not.
Tom. Let's say he changes teams and has a future in the NFL. Just hypothetically. The Browns have devalued their asset to the point that that they have nothing now because they have a first-round pick invested in this kid. I think first round. It was late first round.
No, late first round, like 22nd, 23rd overall, something like that.
Yeah, okay. And that's a huge investment in the NFL. First-round draft picks are like gold. And now you've made it so even if you could trade him, you devalued him to nothing. He would be, like, traded for a player to be named later or a conditional seventh-round draft pick or something ridiculous. So you depreciated your first-round pick asset into a player that you have said publicly you don't want, essentially.
Basically, yeah. And then maybe it's not over here for him in Cleveland. Maybe they give it another shot next year. But man, oh man, I don't know how you're supposed to do that. I don't know how you're supposed to fix that situation. And obviously, you guys are not able to get him under control in the first place. So what's to make you think that it's going to happen in the future? You know, I mean, I don't know. And this is the thing I will say about Johnny Manziel. He makes some decisions that you wouldn't want to see a quarterback make and all these other things. He's 22 years old, and he's got a lot of money. And, you know, I don't know. Me, 22, millions and millions of dollars, I probably make a lot of the same decisions that Johnny Manziel makes. But here, at the end of the day, he's not a criminal. You know, he's not shooting up strip clubs or getting in fights outside of nightclubs where people are getting stabbed and all that. I mean, he drinks. What are you going to do? I don't know. I mean, should he drink? Probably not. But at the end of the day, he's not breaking the law. And I just feel like there's a lot of overreaction in the media these days. And there it is.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we'll go to move on now to the injury updates this week. We got a lot of guys. Let's see. The guy's not playing Sunday. They are out. That's great. Let's see. What do we got today? Here are your quarterbacks. Sam Bradford's probable. Fitzpatrick's probable. I'm trying to find somebody who's out. Case Keenum's questionable. That's another great story with the concussions. And now we're having a big conference call coming up with the NFLPA, the players, the owners, the coaches about what's going on with concussion protocol in the wake of Case Keenum. That situation that happened not last week, but the week before. Looks like Foles is going to start there. And also Ben Roethlisberger, who self-reported a concussion probably about a drive and a half after it happened. Once they were basically eliminated from the game. Let's see. Running back.
I'm a huge fan of self-reporting.
Yes, obviously. Danny Amendola is questionable today. That's a true game time decision, and that's important to you. If you have Danny Amendola in your fantasy football league, that's a huge thing for you, because if he plays, he's their guy. I mean, he's their one guy that they have, because Gronkowski's out. Pretty simple. And Danny Amendola is going to be the only really established receiving threat that they'll have. Looks
so
like Willie Steen. Yeah, go ahead.
Today was sort of Cardinals running back situation.
Oh.
And so it looks like both Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington are out.
Well, Johnson's IR.
Yeah, right. So you've got David Johnson as the only guy, basically.
Yeah. So that's a story.
High volume.
Yeah, for sure. With Chris Johnson, a really resurgent year. He had a great probably played about 8 or 10 weeks, and it was really good. For a good portion of that there in Arizona, it was good to see for Chris Johnson, kind of resurrecting his career a little bit. But unfortunately, the season's over, and we'll have to see what kind of chances he gets next year.
Check it out. They put him on IR with designation to return. The week
he can return is
the Super Bowl.
Okay, so if they make the Super Bowl, that's right. Okay, so if they make the Super Bowl, he can play again. So they got that going for them. Now I'm saying, I mean, they might. They're a good team. They could legitimately make a run at the Super Bowl. But I think I don't know. You may have seen the last.
Interesting injury notes. Tyler Eifert's not going to play today.
Yep.
So if you have him, you need to find an option at tight end. And the interesting option is Buccaneers tight end Austin Seferian Jenkins is expected to play after missing 9 games.
Yeah.
And
so
he had high expectations going in.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of talk that if he does play, it's going to take away from Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson, because Winston's going to like this. I don't know. I mean, 9 weeks out, he's got a really good rapport with Mike Evans, especially because Mike's been there the whole time, and they've really found a decent connection. Now, Mike Evans, for whatever reason, has dropped a few balls, but another guy who's a really great play today, not that we're getting to that segment yet, but we'll get into this a little more, is the other New England Patriots tight end, Scott Chandler. But he's probable, so he'll most likely play. And here's the people who are out. Obviously, we won't get into the quarterbacks, Manning, Luck, Romo. Okay, Ryan Matthews won't play. Andre Ellington, Alan Hearns for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's a huge loss for them. We knew Marshawn wasn't going to play. Rashard Matthews from the Dolphins is out. We knew Edelman was out. Carlos Williams is out. And looks like Carlos Hyde
will not play today.
Right. Carlos Hyde also will continue to miss due to his foot injury. So there's your injury report basically for the day. I guess that's really awful, but whatever. So yeah, so New England now, they're down Deion Lewis, who's done for the year, Julian Edelman, Rob Gronkowski. I mean, whether or not Amendola plays is a huge thing for New England today, and they've got a game, you know. Who are they playing today, Mike?
Philly. They are.
Yep.
They get Philly at home.
Oh, never mind. They're fine. Sit everybody.
LeGarrette won 200-yard game. It don't matter. They'll find a way with Philly. I'm not. Today is not the game I'm necessarily worried about.
I wouldn't be either.
And I think the thing with the Patriots is they've done enough, you know, through the year being 10-1. They're going to get most likely the first round bye. So they're pretty much set for that, assuming they don't just totally collapse with the injuries. And
right.
all of these guys are essentially supposed to come back at some point this year, unless the Patriots are playing at coy, which I wouldn't put it past them because that's what they do. I mean,
yeah.
we could be sitting here with Gronk truly having a tore up knee, and they just are trying to give people hope or whatever by saying he's coming back. I wouldn't put it past them. But, you know, according to the media reports anyway, all those guys are supposed to come back. So they're only going to get more healthy, unlike a lot of the teams at this time of year, as the season wears on here.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, you know, obviously being a Patriots fan, they play it really close to the vest and all that kind of stuff. But you got to look at, like, a timeline. Because I noticed someone in my league still has Julian Edelman. One of my fantasy leagues, they still have Julian Edelman. And they have him on their bench. And I'm thinking, okay, well, he broke his foot in week 10.
Oh, yeah, he's not going to be back in the regulars. There's no.
That's what I'm saying. Why, if you, I mean, obviously, whatever. I mean, if your team's just completely out of it and you don't even care and you just want to keep him on your bench because Julian Edelman's your favorite player or something, I mean, that's fine. But if you're wasting a roster spot and you're still alive in your league and you could pick up someone else who could potentially help you, that's not a good idea. Because point being, Julian Edelman will not be back before the playoffs. There's just, even though the Patriots haven't come out and said, oh, it's a 5 or 6 week or it's 6 to 8 week or whatever it is, and we've done this and we've done that, like, you know, the Cowboys did earlier in the year with Dez Bryant, The Patriots just don't do that, so you don't know for sure, but I'm telling you, he broke his foot 3 weeks ago. He's got at least 3 more, probably 4 more weeks before he's even thinking about getting back on the field. So there's that. All right, guys, what we'll do now, we're going to take a break. During the break, we'll have a couple nice commercials for you. When we come back, we're going to do our fantasy hot or not segment, and maybe we'll try and get Mike's technical difficulties straightened out for him. What do you think, Mike?
What are you gonna do?
That sounded very, very noncommittal. All right, we'll be right back on Assignment Football right after this on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network.
Fan Up Network. Track your fantasy team, get player updates, and expert advice all in one place. Gain the edge. FanUpNetwork.com.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com as your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
Hey, NFL fans. Be sure to join Alan Slaughterzinski, Brian Yates, and John Ames every Sunday at 10 a.m. right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network for the NFL Standard. Every Sunday morning at 10 Eastern, Alan, John, and Brian will bring you up-to-the-minute fantasy football news and notes, injury reports, as well as all of the news from around the National Football League. Again, every Sunday morning at 10 right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network, it's the NFL Standard. I can't miss for every NFL fan.
Attention sports fans. FantasySportsWarehouse.com is more than your traditional fantasy sports website. They are the one-stop shop for all things sports. And now, the time to make their mark on daily fantasy gaming has come. Sign up at DFSWarehouse.com and deposit up to $600 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. Just want to check it out. They also offer free rolls to help hone your skills. You'll find plenty of great articles, podcasts, swag, and more, no matter who you root for. Whether you're a fantasy owner or a regular sports fan, it's the one-stop shop that's got you covered. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com or DFSWarehouse.com to find out why they are the first and only place you'll ever need to go to get your sports coverage and fantasy gaming fix.
Assignment Football, Week 13 of the NFL, Episode 19 of Assignment Football. That song, the first song, okay, so the song we opened the show with today, Mike, that was a song called A Box Full of Sharp Objects by a band called The Used. This song that we just heard, that is The Tragically Hip. That would be Kingston, Ontario's own Tragically Hip with a song called 50 Mission Cap, which is a pretty cool tune that I've always liked, but it's just a really great guitar riff coming in out of the break. What did you think?
I think you grew up too close to Canada.
I so did. Tragically Hip, if you like rock and roll, that kind of rock and roll, they are a really, really great band. If you haven't ever listened to them, and if you like bands like, you know, like Pearl Jam kind bands, I guess would be a good way to put it, take a listen to the Tragically Hip. They got about 7 or 8 albums out. They're still touring to this day. They've been out since the late 80s, early 90s, and they're a really good rock band. So pretty exciting stuff. 50 Mission Cap. Okay, so here we are, Fantasy Hot or Not, Mike. We've got week 13 of the NFL season. So here we go. So I'll just put it in perspective for you. In one of my fantasy leagues, the one that's pretty local here, so I get to interact with the guys that I'm with on a much more regular basis, I started out the season 0-5, which obviously is not what you're looking to do. But since that time, I've gone 6-1 in the last 7 weeks. I've made a lot of changes to my roster. I've pulled off some trades, got some waiver wire pickups, and some of the guys that I had on my team started playing a little bit better, being what I thought they would be. So now here I am. It's a league where the top 6 get in, and I'm sitting at 5th. But there are 2 guys who are pretty much in, and then there's 2 guys that are pretty much out, and then there's this group of us that are all 6-6. I want to say it's 6 teams, 5 teams, something like that. We're all 6-6. 2 matchups this week of 6-6 guys, and then, you know, so 2 of those guys are going to lose. 2 of those guys are going to win. Looks like we're going to get a 6-7 team in, but you don't want to count on that. So it's a very important week. Like my playoffs, we have a 3-week playoff system because there's 6 of us that get in. So my playoffs start next week. A lot of people start the week after that. So I'm really, today is my day. I've got to win this game today. Mike, who can I pick up off the waiver wire to help me win today?
You need a quarterback?
Anybody. What's your guy?
Okay, so for a quarterback, I tell you, there's a couple of guys out there who I think have huge games today that may not be owned. First and foremost, get Ryan Fitzpatrick to the Jets, who's kind of a questionably owned guy. And he gets the Giants' number 32 rated pass defense this week. So that's fun. From an overall perspective of the guy who you can't pick up right now, what kind of game is Cam going to have today?
Oh, my goodness.
He gets New Orleans in the dome. He's going to run all over him.
They are such a bad defense. Defense is so bad. And, like, even when they make a good play, if they make a good play, you can count on the fact that Browner is going to hold somebody and negate that good play.
So I think if you needed to pick somebody up today as far as a quarterback, Fitzpatrick's a good option. Depending on how deep your league is and how owned people are, a guy that probably isn't owned no matter how deep it is that might have a good day is Hasselbeck. Indy gets Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is surprisingly bad against the pass. They're the third worst pass defense in the league. I would have never thought that until I was looking at stats.
They need to play DeMarco Thomas.
It's a better – yeah, really. What the heck? They take a lot of turnover in their secondary, though. I guess it does make sense. Paul Lawler retired. Brian Clark retired. And they leaned on those guys pretty hard for a lot of years. So I guess that makes sense. So running back-wise, running back is so thin right now. I think the only one that's a chance at would have been David Johnson from Arizona as far as a guy having a great week that you might have been able to pick up. But you would have had to been on top of the whole injury waiver wire there, I think, honestly.
Him or Sean Drones, but that's another one you had to be right on top of that, too. I mean, he had a decent week last week. I was able to get him in one league, which I'm just – but, it's a shot in the dark. I mean, you're talking about a 49ers running back there. Another guy who was big on people's lists and had high projections for this week is Duke Johnson from Cleveland. But, okay, maybe. But, running back is so difficult this week. If you're picking up a waiver wire running back and serving him in your lineup and trying to win a game this week, you pretty much got to get lucky. You just got to get lucky.
And you're at the point with running backs where there probably isn't anybody available. I can't even remember the kid's name, but it's like fifth-string running back in Kansas City. They've gone through so many – oh, Spencer Ware, I think it is.
Yeah, Spencer Ware, yeah.
He's a viable option because our Kendrick Watson has been a little banged up, and they run the ball a lot. Their offense has been really good lately. They haven't turned the ball over in like 5 weeks. They look really good right now. The running
and their defense is good.
Big timeshare of some sort between those two guys today. And so there's a guy that there's a chance to pick up that's going to get some work today.
Yeah, absolutely. But with Sharkhandrick West back, that kind of lowers his value to a degree at least. So there's that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, if you were able – but he's another guy. If you were able to get him last week, it was great. This week, who knows? Maybe not as good. So there's that. Wide receiver-wise, again, you're looking at –
Devin Funchess, dude.
Yeah, take a chance on Devin Funchess, possibly Keyshawn Martin. For the Patriots, could be a chance, especially if Amendola doesn't play, that could be better. Funchess for sure. If you can get a hold of Funchess playing against New Orleans, or if you can get, I don't know, you're probably not getting Decker or Marshall. I don't know. If you can get anybody playing against either the Giants' defensive secondary or the Saints' defensive secondary, you're probably in pretty good shape. Kind of the same thing with running backs, but unfortunately, you're not getting, in terms of playing whoever's playing against Cleveland, but you're not getting a hold of Jeremy Hill or Giovanni Bernard this week, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I have all four of those names written down that you just said. Hill, Bernard, Decker, and Marshall, but they're really just all guys that are already on. It's more like start those guys over other priorities. All four of those guys have a high starting priority this week. You're not picking those guys up off the waiver.
Right, because really that's where we're at this point in the season. If you're still looking for guys that, I mean, you're already probably toast anyway. You know what I mean? You're like Mike, who's 10th in the Honda City League, who's just like, when does this end so I can give you my $50?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, a guy that's really been on fire the last few weeks in a receiver that's ownable right now is Doug Baldwin from Seattle. He's been really good. Against Arizona 3 weeks ago, he had 7 catches for 134 and a touchdown. Last week he had 6 catches against Pittsburgh for 145 and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
A lot of targets. 4 weeks in a row he's got 6 or more targets. His numbers have been really strong lately. So he's a guy that's picked up in the second half of the season. And because of that, he was pretty bad for a long time. He's probably ownable too in a lot of
leagues. Yeah, he's out there in a few leagues. I had a guy ask me because he was going to pick up either he or Javon Kurse, which one he should pick up. And I said, you got to pick up Baldwin at this point. He's the only one who's reliable. I mean, Kurse might get a touchdown or might have a big game. But Baldwin, especially now with Jimmy Graham gone, even though Graham wasn't a huge part of the offense for a lot of the year, it's just, I mean, you're going to have to, he's going to have to throw that way. He's going to have to look Baldwin's way more because Baldwin is his most reliable receiver on that offense. But that being said, you may want to take a look at Luke Wilson as well. If you're in need of tight end, your tight end slot's not great. You may be able to pick up Luke Wilson today and put him in your lineup and have him be a really effective tight end option for you. He does like Wilson. And Wilson to Wilson is a good combination. It's probably not Rodgers to Rodgers from this past week, but could be good. And Russell Wilson does look for Luke Wilson. He does have a connection with him. He's made some huge catches for them in the past.
Trying to think who's the backup. Who's the backup tight end to Kelce? Because Kelce's been banged up and Oakland's really bad against the
that's a good question.
I've only ever heard of Kelce though, so I can't think of any of these guys being a great option. But I tell you what, I might want to roster a guy named James O'Shaughnessy just because I would want to roster a guy named O'Shaughnessy.
There you go. How's that?
I get all name team if nothing else.
For sure, that's right up there with Sharkhandrick West.
Yep.
Or the old school Shimanga Biaka Batuka. if you remember that
God
guy.
Sham God had the all-time best name ever of any sports
yeah,
star.
God Sham God. Yeah. Or what?
Providence point guard back in the day.
How about, this is the Rutgers basketball player, Doobie. Quincy Doobie?
Yeah, Quincy Doobie. He dropped 40 against my boy Eric Diebendorf one time. And still
And I'm going to be honest with you, folks. If you know who Eric Diebendorf is, Mike is not, like, facetiously saying, my boy. Diebendorf is Mike's boy. Their boy.
He's a good guy.
He is a really good guy. A lot of fun. I mean, he got in a little trouble at Syracuse, too, but nobody Johnny Manziel'd him.
No,
they wanted
right.
to win games. All right. So, anyway, so that's good. We're gonna cut it off there. I'm fine with that. Are you okay with that?
I am. Yeah, that's.
I mean, it's just really hard, guys. Good luck in your fantasy playoffs.
You know who also is going to have a great game, in my opinion. I talked about it briefly earlier. Is LeGarrette Blount. I think that New England's going to. It's going to be one of those days where you see him carry the ball 25, 30 times, and that's when he gets touches. He's really effective. The games where he's sort of in a timeshare, even split with one of the other backs.
Right.
His numbers are never as good, but when he gets to pound the defense all game. What you see is in the third and fourth quarter, the defenders aren't so game to tackle him anymore because he's a load.
Right, and Philadelphia
the
and
first time thinking he's tough, and the second time he goes to hit him, he's not as
robust. Yeah, and Philadelphia. Just be completely honest. You know, Dallas is in last place in that division, but Philadelphia is on the verge of becoming a dumpster fire. They've given up 90 points the last 2 weeks. They're facing, one of the better offenses in the NFL, despite the fact that they are a little depleted, personnel-wise. I'm telling you, if Amendola plays, look for him to have a huge game because their slot corner, Biggers, is not good. They're not particularly good against the run. They're not particularly good against the pass. I don't think they particularly want to play for Chip Kelly anymore, to be honest with you. You hear rumblings out of that, out of that locker room. To their credit, no one on the current roster has called him a racist yet.
It's coming.
Yeah, for sure. End of the season. Yeah, that'll be your offseason theme once again.
So the offensive injuries have really hurt New England. And they do have sort of a history with Brady of making guys you've never heard of look good. But they've had, since the bulk of the injuries, they've played against some tough defenses. The Bills, look. Say what you want about Rex Ryan. He knows how to attack Tom Brady, and they got pressure up the middle that whole game. Brady didn't get much of an opportunity to work it around to the different receivers. It was kind of like get rid of it in a second and a half or get plastered. And then last week they played at the Broncos in snow. Now, if there's one team that's going to make all these biscuits for the Patriots look like NFL All-Stars, it's Philly. And
oh, yeah.
I think what you'll find today is a couple of these guys you never heard of have, nine catch, 130-yard type stat lines where you just go, wow, maybe that guy's really good. No, Philly will make them look really good. I just have that feeling that it's going to be okay.
Again, and look at that, a slot player, Keyshawn Martin earlier. Chris Harper, I'm telling you, Chris Harper could come out of the slot and have a big day because he's just the kind of.
I'll tell you what, Chris Harper fields that punt last week. They win that game against Denver, too. So I don't have any love.
So he better do something.
He owns the Patriots more.
He does. All right, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will do our segment today, 2015, the year of the bad call. I think Mike might have a couple opinions about this, so we'll do that right after this, right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network.
Will it be the SEC, the Big 12, the Pac-12, the ACC, or the Big 10 in 2015? Which college football conference reigns supreme? Find out every Thursday night at 8 p.m. on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network as Alan Slaughter-Zinsky brings you the Thursday College Football Blitz. Each and every Thursday night, Alan delivers you all of the news and notes from around the world of college football, all of the rankings, the Heisman Watch, the updated standings, get you ready for the upcoming weekend and college football. Again, for the best coverage in college football this season, join Alan every Thursday night at 8 p.m. right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network for the Thursday College Football Blitz.
Attention sports fans! FantasySportsWarehouse.com is more than your traditional fantasy sports website. They are the one-stop shop for all things sports. And now, the time to make their mark on daily fantasy gaming has come. Sign up at DFSWarehouse.com and deposit up to $600 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. Just want to check it out. They also offer free rolls to help hone your skills. You'll find plenty of great articles, podcasts, swag, and more, no matter who you root for. Whether you're a fantasy owner or a regular sports fan, it's the one-stop shop that's got you covered. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com or DFSWarehouse.com to find out why they are the first and only place you'll ever need to go to get your sports coverage and fantasy gaming fix.
Fan Up Network. Track your fantasy team, get player updates, and expert advice all in one place. Gain the edge. FanUpNetwork.com.
You live it, breathe it, dream about it. You poured your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And this year, victory is yours. Because you've got FantasySportsWarehouse.com as your secret weapon. Fantasy Sports Warehouse is your one-stop shop for fantasy sports products, blogs, and the latest info. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com to get info to help you dominate the fantasy sports season wherever you go.
Is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me, it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, we are back. Recognize that song, you are old like I am. History Repeating by the Propeller Heads from the late 90s, early 2000s. Did you know that one, Mike?
I had no idea who the artist was. Actually, if I had to guess, I would have said that song was from like the 60s or something.
Actually, the reason why you say that, and it's actually a good ear from you, the lady singing on there is a lady named Shirley Bassey. She is an English singer who was really big in the 60s. As a matter of fact, she actually sang a bunch, like, I want to say three or four of the Bond themes from back there, like Diamonds Are Forever, a couple other ones like that. So she actually, that was her era, was the 60s. So they got her to do the vocal for them on that song, and they felt pretty good about it. And they should, because it was good. Anyway, so before we go any further.
To our show right now, one thing you should know about our host, Tom Duff, is that he has the most wealth of useless knowledge of anybody you'll ever encounter. I guarantee he didn't research anything he just told you about that lady. He knew it all off the top of his head.
That's true. I did know a lot about Shirley Bassey. I am also a huge Bond fan, though. So that's, I mean, so there's that. But, okay, yes.
You're all right, eclectic, oddball things, so you have all this other useless knowledge because of your fandom.
I love minutia. I really do. I'm sorry. I love the tiny little things that you're like, oh, did you get that? And people are like, no, why are you even paying attention to that weirdo? And that's me. All right. So before we go any further, I want to remind you that we are here at Assignment Football, brought to you by FanUpNetwork.com. So go to FanUpNetwork.com today to sign up for the free FanUp Network app. Simply register at FanUpNetwork.com and follow the instructions for your platform, Android, iPhone, Windows, what have you. And FanUp Network will help you dominate in all of your leagues. You can keep track of all your fantasy teams in one place, see real-time player news, receive expert fantasy advice. So go to FanUpNetwork.com and sign up today and follow them on Twitter at FanUp Network. So obviously fantasy football is kind of winding down. We're getting into the playoff time, but it's not just fantasy football. If you're a fantasy basketball player, fantasy hockey player, if you play fantasy baseball, you're going to start thinking about that soon. So it's a year-round thing for FanUp Network. Make sure you're checking them out because they're really, really good, and they do a really great job. So right now we're going to go into our segment today called 2015, the Year of the Bad Call. Mike, I'm going to let you go first. I want you to talk about, let me do this first. Dean Blandino of the NFL released a statement. They had an interview, whatever it was. So basically, he's the vice president of officiating for the National Football League, and his release says stuff like this: officials have made a very small number of mistakes this season. There is a perception now that officiating is not very good at the moment, but the reality is that the officiating is very good. We're talking about a handful of plays that have happened in high-profile situations. Those have been mistakes. We own them. We have to make the corrections and the adjustments to make sure they don't happen again. What do you think of that statement, Mike?
I don't think anything will change. So there's unions, there's employees, there's, you know, as is typical with things nowadays, change is difficult.
Right.
Because of laws, you know, the
all these other
inertia
things.
Of people not wanting to change things, essentially. But what what the NFL needs is guys in a room with TVs to be officials. I mean, they can see the whole field, and then have guys on the field like to mark the ball, to move the chains, et cetera, et cetera. But even that, like the moving of the chains, to me has gotten to the point of, you know, we have GPS. We put a little yellow line on the TV screen. There needs to come a point where you just go, nope, that's not a first down. We've got a laser level at the 42.5-yard line, and your ball didn't cross it, you know.
Certainly, we should be somewhere where the technology is there for that. I mean, I don't know if you'll ever get there because, again, like you say, unions and stuff like that. I think his take on this is obviously company line. I think there have been a lot of bad calls this year.
I agree.
I can come up with specific examples. I mean, even, you know, going back and not to get back on the 2014 train, but if Dez Bryant makes a catch in a playoff game and puts his left foot down with possession of the football and then his right foot down with possession of the football and then puts his left foot down again with possession of the football and lunges through the end zone and then when he hits the ground, the ball comes out, if that's not a catch, I don't know what a catch is. Go back.
I had no horse in the race in that game, and I was also of the school of Dez caught the ball.
It's 3 feet. Three feet down.
Look, I've seen reasonable people that are also not a fan of either team say that's not a catch. And so,
yeah.
You know.
Well, unfortunately, Mike, most people who are not a fan of the Dallas Cowboys have some deep-seated hatred for the Cowboys, and a lot of it makes no sense at all, but they just hate the Cowboys. They're like, yeah, the Cowboys didn't catch it. But whatever. That's fine. You're entitled to your opinion. My point on it is that the rules have become so convoluted that the referees can't even figure it out for themselves. And now you're at a point this week, okay, and it actually happens to deal with the Cowboys. So the crew that was originally scheduled, to referee the Monday night game in Washington between the Cowboys and the Washington team has been pulled. Yeah, the Redskins, whatever. So they've been pulled because they did so poorly the week before. I've never heard of this happening. Right, well, this is Pete Morelli's crew, right? So and he's saying, well, it's no worse than it's no worse than it's ever been. I have never, ever, ever heard of the I can't remember it ever happening where the NFL pulled a crew off a game because they did so bad.
I've never heard that before either, and I think I'll be honest, I don't think overall the officiating is any worse than it's ever been. I really don't. I think what you've seen is a few weeks in a row where high profile, nationally televised games ended with flags on the field, where there was relevant flags in the last 45 seconds of three or four games in a row. And it's almost like if the refs just swallowed their whistles for the minute to end of the game, they'd have been better off. Because you wouldn't remember any of the other calls in the game. What you remember is, I mean, I can point them out specifically because they are calls that impacted games at the end. The face mask against Rodgers, the holding in the end zone in the Patriots game, the non-stoppage of the clock in the Patriots-Bills game with 2 seconds left where the Bills should have got another down. I mean, there's specific plays at the very end of game that won or lost the game, and that's why it seems like the officiating overall is so bad.
The problem is that
you got to remember with NFL officiating is so many of the things are judgment calls. Like, all of the holding plays, all of the offensive and defensive holding, what is a face mask? Look, his hand did touch Aaron Rodgers' face mask. Did he grasp it and pull it and turn his head, you know?
Right. Well, and that's the rule. You have to grasp it. And even if you grasp it, if you let go, and that's the rule, you have to grasp the face mask. And even if you grasp it, if you let go without twisting the head, they're not supposed to call it. the way it is. And so, and that's the problem I'm getting to. The NFL officials are just they're unable to decipher what is and what isn't anymore. A lot of these things, you know what I mean, as far as defensive holding.
The other play where I think this was one of the Patriots games as well. There was, I guess it's obvious I watched all their games. There was an injured player for the other team, and they were out of timeout. I think it was the Denver game. And
yes.
So they gave them an extra timeout, and that's how they worded it. They worded it as a timeout, and then they stopped the ball, started running the clock, and it's like, well, was it a timeout or not?
Right. They wound the clock, and Brady and Belichick are both going, you know, insane because why is this clock running? It was a timeout. Well, it was. We called it a timeout, but it wasn't really a timeout. It's this thing that's not a timeout that we do sometimes, but we call it a timeout, but it isn't a timeout. The time doesn't actually stop, only until the guy gets off the field. And that's what I'm getting at. And it's stuff like that. The catch rules. I mean, they've gotten to the point where it's just like, is it a catch? If you look at it and it's a catch, it's a catch. If you look at it and it isn't a catch, it's not a catch. This is where, like the catch rule in particular, that's where instant replay has actually hurt the game, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because you're replaying a call that no matter how many times you watch it, it's still arguable. Like,
right.
You're not getting a definitive, did the ball cross the plane of the goal line while it was in the possession of a receiver? Like, that's a definable yes, it is. Whereas
right, you're reviewing.
Well, you're one step, but then the ball got knocked out. You know,
right.
All of those little things. Or it sort of moved a little when he hit the ground. But is that the natural movement of the ball's in his hands and he's got possession? Like, you're making all these judgment calls within this one-second window that you've got frame by frame on, and it's almost better off just watch it in real time and go, reasonable people agree that the catch time.
Right, exactly. So that's the thing. I mean, where do you go from there? And so now, and like he comes out and you're saying even that I don't think it's that much worse than it's been in the past as far as the officiating goes, but they're telling you that it is. As a matter of fact, they're telling you that Pete Morelli's crew just officiated the worst game ever officiated in the history of the NFL. And they're telling you that because they're pulling that crew off a game. They're saying, you're so bad, we can't even have you out there on primetime. There's just no way.
I would be willing to guess that that's happened before.
I don't remember it. And I'll say that. Maybe it has happened, but I don't remember. But I'll tell you this also. The thing is that Pete Morelli has been an NFL referee for a very long time. And
yep.
He isn't. Yeah, I mean, most people out there probably don't know the names of the officials. I can probably name a bunch of the referees. I can name a bunch of them. Pete Morelli, Gene Steratore, Ed Hockley, Jeff Triplett. Jeff Triplett, by the way, who is the worst referee in the league. He is awful. He is a horrendous referee. Obviously, Mike Carey.
Who's the black guy with the lisp? Because he is awful. He's a great
rock. I can't remember. I remember there was Mike Carey, who's now he's with Fox, I believe. No, wait, that's he's with CBS. Mike Carey's with CBS. Ferreira's with Fox. I can't remember that guy actually hasn't been a referee that long. I know exactly who you're talking about, but he is good. He is really good. But like I said, Morelli is not a bad referee. Here's the thing. Pete Morelli actually was the referee of the Dallas-Detroit wildcard game last year, right? So, and this is something you also never used to see happen. So they make a call. It's a fourth down play. Was it a fourth down play? Well, it was late in the game, and Detroit had the lead, and they were trying to ice the clock, and they needed this pass, and they pass it to, I believe it was Pettigrew, who grabbed Hitchens' face mask. That doesn't get called. But Hitchens kind of runs into him in the process of all this, and then they call pass interference. And then they announce the call, pass interference, automatic first down. And then they reverse the call after having announced the call. And like, not quickly either. Another, like, 5 or 10 seconds goes by, and then all of a sudden you've got the TV crew going, wait, they picked up that flag? They already announced it. I've never in the history of my life seen a flag, a penalty that was announced, then rescinded. And that was Pete Morelli's crew that did that, too.
Well,
it's unbelievable.
I unfortunately, I feel like it's sort of one of those things that's beyond your control. And I'll go back to that Patriots-Denver game. You can complain all you want about the officiating as a Patriots fan. And I mean, when I'm watching the game, I'm, you know, my hands are raised. There's a couple of other calls that were made that were, you know, noteworthy as
atrocious.
Well, not to get into minutia of it, but, you know, the thing that really stood out to me, though, is if they field a punt, they win the game. Like, the game was still, you can say everything you want about the officials, the game was within their grasp and within their control to win. Their player makes the play he's out there to make. And I think that in all their meetings and everything else, I would be willing to bet that that's the conversation that occurs with the Patriots, is here's what we didn't do that was controllable by us.
Well, that's it, because that's what you can control.
Yeah, and they still could have won that particular game. That kind of is one of these ones where we're going, that's egregious. To me, I'm surprised the Bills fans weren't louder about the whole, you know,
oh my gosh,
another play at the end of that game. Because that,
how did the clock not stop?
That's one of the worst calls I've ever seen. That call is one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a close game. There's two. It's not like it's you're losing by 17 points and you just like, all right, whatever, just let it run. It's fine. You've got a legitimate shot to win the game if you can get another playoff.
Yep.
Things can happen.
You know, they don't happen often. That's why we call it a Hail Mary. But as evidenced by Thursday night, they do happen. And
right.
I mean, look, the Bills are going to end up this season probably within one game, give or take, of making or missing the playoffs. And the fact that they got cheated out of a play at the end of a game that could have won the game, I mean, they have legit gripes. But that's, again, to return to my original point, though, is that's why we're really seeing sort of the onus being put on the officials. The calls are being made right at the end of the games where it's obvious and it's the last thing you remember about this close game and this call.
Absolutely. All right, guys. We're going to go ahead and take a break. If you got anything to say about that, please let us know. You can tweet at us at AssignmentFBall on Twitter. That's on your Twitter machine. But we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will be joined by Tim Weaver of Cover32.com. He's going to help us break down our featured game of the week, which is the Seattle Seahawks at the all of a sudden division-leading Minnesota Vikings. And we'll do that when we come back right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network.
Hey, football fans, looking for an alternative to your boring NFL pregame show? Try the NFL Standard right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network. Every Sunday morning at 10 a.m., Alan Slaughter-Zinsky, Brian Yates, and John Ames deliver the best in fantasy news, notes, and information from around the world of the National Football League. The guys will get you set for all of the big games in the day with their game previews, as well as injury updates and all of the news and notes from around the world of the National Football League. Once again, if you're looking for the best in NFL game day coverage, right here on the Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network, every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. with Alan, John, and Brian on the NFL Standard.
Fan Up Network. Track your fantasy team, get player updates, and expert advice all in one place. Gain the edge. FanUpNetwork.com.
Attention sports fans. FantasySportsWarehouse.com is more than your traditional fantasy sports website. They are the one-stop shop for all things sports. And now, the time to make their mark on daily fantasy gaming has come. Sign up at DFSWarehouse.com and deposit up to $600 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. Just want to check it out. They also offer free rolls to help hone your skills. You'll find plenty of great articles, podcasts, swag, and more, no matter who you root for. Whether you're a fantasy owner or a regular sports fan, it's the one-stop shop that's got you covered. Go to FantasySportsWarehouse.com or DFSWarehouse.com to find out why they are the first and only place you'll ever need to go to get your sports coverage and fantasy gaming fix.
Fan Up Network. Track your fantasy team, get player updates, and expert advice all in one place. Gain the edge. FanUpNetwork.com.
Yes, and welcome back to excitement football on Fantasy Sports Warehouse Radio Network. That, of course, is the incomparable Elton John and his big Christmas song, Step Into Christmas. Mike, are you in the Christmas spirit? You're having a Star Wars-themed Christmas party, so I imagine that you're slightly in the mood for some Christmas.
I got a decorated tree sitting right behind me, man. I'm ready to go. There's presents under it and everything else. We're in the spirit. I got an elf on the shelf flying above.
Oh, if you have an elf on the shelf, like riding a B-wing fighter, that would be pretty cool.
Dude, he just unfortunately decided to fly a spacecraft today.
All right, awesome. So here we go. We are now joined by our good friend of the program, Tim Weaver of Cover32.com. Tim, you there?
I am here.
Awesome. Good to hear from you again. Tim lives up there in the old Pacific Northwest, and today we're going to talk about Tim's favorite football team, the Seattle Seahawks, as they travel to the land of a thousand lakes, Minnesota, to take on the suddenly resurgent and very powerful Vikings this year. But first, do you want to talk Star Wars at all, Tim?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Do you want to talk Star Wars at all?
Star Wars, I can talk Star Wars all day and all night. I have the trailer on repeat in my head. I don't even need to watch it anymore at this point. I can just, like, press the button in my mind, and I have it all in there. It's ready to go. I don't have tickets as of yet. I think I'm going to avoid that cluster, so to speak, the first day is going to be. But I'm going to get there several times, I'm sure, over the first few days. I can't wait. I saw Carrie Fisher the other day on Good Morning America. Look this up. I recommend anybody, if you love Star Wars, she was just hilarious on Good Morning America the other day. Really, really funny stuff.
Yeah, I heard about that appearance. It seemed like it was pretty good stuff. All right, but we're all excited for Star Wars for sure, but let's get excited today for the Seattle Seahawks and Minnesota Vikings. They're going against each other up in Minnesota, outside in the elements, as it were. This is a huge game for playoff implications. This is almost a must-have for the Seattle Seahawks. They've got to get some road wins here. Minnesota's a tough team to get them against. What do you think happens today, Tim? What are you looking for?
You know, before the season started, I put this down as one of these potential pitfall games. Like, this is a team the Seahawks should beat. You know, they're kind of gritty. They've got a tough defense. They're going to be on the road. I didn't think they were going to be this good. I really like the moves that Mike Zimmer has made. He's turned them around. You remember a couple years ago, I think they may have had the worst defense in the league. Aside from the Cowboys, like in 2013, they were just awful. And Harrison Smith and a couple other guys have really turned it around. But the culture, more than anything, he's just really turned them around. And this is probably the toughest game of the season to call. I think going in Green Bay might have been tougher, perhaps the Carolina game, but this is just a really tough one. I think 538 put this at 50-50. In other words, like, they did thousands and thousands of simulation, and they have no idea who's going to come out on top of this one. So I think it's going to come down to one of these. Absolutely. One of these, like, last-second field goals. It depends. Whoever gets the ball, it's either going to be up to Blair Walsh or Steven Hoska picking, like, a 50-yarder into the wind at the last second. That's probably what's going to happen at the end of this one.
Yeah, I like it. I'll tell you what. Mike and I were both on Minnesota pretty early. I didn't know that I thought that they would be this good, but I think even back in the preseason, Mike and I both were kind of pretty high on Minnesota. As a matter of fact, I think what happened was I did not pick them to make the playoffs, but I thought they would end up being somewhere in the 9-7 range. So at this point, that prediction could still happen, but I don't see it coming from there. Mike, what do you got for Tim? What's a good question for Tim today?
Well, I guess my expectation for this game is a little different than yours. I think from what I've seen from Seattle, and a little bit of my expectation of Seattle going into the season even, was they're just so much better at home than they are on the road. And they have lost two home games this year, but they've been competitive games to the two best teams they've played this season. So you can even sort of forgive the home losses. And they lose to teams they should beat on the road. And I think Minnesota's going to have their way, to be honest. So what do you think about that dichotomy between Seattle at home, Seattle on the road?
There's definitely a big difference between playing at home and on the road, but there are people who would tell you that the home advantage is not what it used to be anymore, maybe because after they won the Super Bowl, you have all these corporate sponsors coming in buying the tickets, so it's not as loud anymore. The fans don't know exactly what they're supposed to do. But they're not as bad on the road as you might think. They really put up a challenge in Green Bay earlier this year. They had the lead in the fourth quarter, if you remember. Same thing happened in St. Louis, and they just play everyone brutally in the dome. They can't beat anyone away from the dome, but remember last year they crushed the Broncos. They beat us there. They beat us there again this year. But Seahawks will play anybody tough, depending on the circumstances. And I think that it's just a really, really tough matchup. I played this few Madden games this week, and I played it both ways. I played as the Seahawks. I lost to the Vikings. I played as the Vikings, and I beat the Seahawks. I think the home field advantage might be just a little bit too much for Seattle to overcome. But the other side of this is the offense over the last few weeks has just been blowing us away. It's been terrible this entire year. Darrell Bevell just drives us crazy. The offensive line has been completely ineffective. But the last 3 weeks or so, since about halftime of the Arizona game, they've been leading the league in scoring since that time, something around 33 points per game. Wilson looks amazing in the pocket. He's getting the ball out fast. He's sharp. He's looking much better than he has, probably since his rookie year or so. So that might be enough to push them over the top, just because that offense is really hot right now. But then again, they lost Jimmy Graham, which, you know, there was some trouble getting him involved in the offense earlier this year. But I think they are going to miss him. It might be just a little bit too much, and Minnesota will probably come out on top in a close one.
Well, so earlier this season, I criticized Russell Wilson because a lot of people were talking about his offensive line not being that good. And it was kind of like, yeah, but he gets the ball and runs around with it for 5 seconds. It's not the offensive line's fault that they can't hold their blocks for 5 seconds. And I had said earlier in the season, I thought that the thing Russell Wilson wasn't doing was taking a 3-step drop and just throwing the ball, or taking a 5-step drop and just throwing the ball, like the great quarterbacks tend to do. The Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, it's that timing. And so the way to attack them is to disrupt their timing and get somebody right up the A-gap or whatever. And with Russell Wilson, what I saw him do was take that 5-step drop, hitch, look around, run around. And, yeah, he'd make plays from time to time, but he was also getting hit a lot. He's getting sacked a lot. And I thought the thing that Seattle needed to do to improve their offense was have Russell Wilson take a 3-step drop and throw the ball. And so it sounds like you're saying that they've improved on that.
Yeah, part of it has definitely been Wilson's tie. I think over the last 2 years, he was dead last in the league as far as hanging on to the ball too long. Like, his time was even worse than Colin Kaepernick, if you can believe it. But the big problem on the offensive line was at center. A few weeks ago, they finally got rid of Drew Nowak, and they brought in Patrick Lewis. And that seems to be, more than anything, the key that stabilized the offensive line. They've been playing a whole lot better. So he has more time, and he's getting rid of the ball quicker. He's making better decisions. He's not hemming and hawing. He's not seeing blitzers, like, what do they call it, seeing ghosts out there anymore when they're not there. So I think that he's much improved, and that'll help a whole lot. So it's going to be really, really interesting. Honestly, if I'm being honest, I have no clue who's going to win this game.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, Marshawn Lynch not playing, but that's even not a huge story because of the fact of the emergence of Thomas Rawls. You got Jimmy Graham, who's not going to be there. But again, how much of a part of the offense was he really? I mean, he was okay. He was getting targets. He was getting, you know, some things here and there. But at the end of the day, he wasn't the big, I don't know, game changer that they thought they probably were getting when they traded away Max Unger, their all-pro center, for him. So, and that's where the center problems have come in. But luckily, like you said, Patrick, the new kid's come in, and he looks pretty good. All right, so let's do this. We'll move on then. We'll go to our pick six segment, which will give us plenty of time to discuss the games that we're going to pick today. Tim, we're going to have you going. I'll just give you guys an idea because we've only got a few games left here. Tim, this is your second time picking. You picking for the guests. The guests this year are 43-29, so that's good. They're 14 games over. Mike, with a 5-1 week last week, moved to 46-26, 20 games over 500. Pretty
wow.
Awesome. Yeah, that's pretty strong. And I am pulling up the rear at 39-33, 6 games over, which, if I was in Vegas, I'd probably be up. So there you go. How's that? New York Jets at the New York Giants. The home and home game, the MetLife Stadium meltdown. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Tim, what do you think today? Jets at Giants. Who do you got?
I'm feeling the Giants today. The one matchup that really jumps out to me is Darrell Revis is still out with that concussion, so I just don't think they have anybody who can hang with Beckham one-on-one. Usually you can have somebody, if you have a really, really talented corner, you can kind of keep him in check. Like, you're going to get his yard, he's going to get his fantasy points, but he may not kill you as long as you have a really good corner who can stick with him. They don't have anybody who can match up with him right now. So I just think if he gets loose one or two times over the top, that's really all the Giants need to win this game. So I think that's what's going to happen. And also the Jets are kind of struggling. I believe they've lost four of their last five.
All right. Mike, what do you think?
I can appreciate everything you just said, but I'm on the Jets. I think the Jets receivers are going to have their way with the Giants secondary. That is, I feel like that's the matchup in this game that it most favors one team or the other. Marshall and Decker are pretty good, and the Giants secondary is really bad.
So. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think I like what you're saying, Tim. I do think Cromartie and maybe a safety, they'll probably bracket coverage on Beckham, but still he'll probably get free for some stuff. I feel like if you're looking at it, offense to offense, you know, obviously quarterback, Eli's a better quarterback than Ryan Fitzpatrick, but Ryan Fitzpatrick's not horrible. They probably have a better group of receivers, even though the Giants have the best receiver. Their running game is probably a little bit better than the Giants' running game, and I think I like the defense a little bit better, a lot better, actually, than I like the Giants' defense. So I'm going to take the Jets as well, but I think it is going to be a close game, and probably the Giants cough up a fourth-quarter lead. That's not like them at all. Houston at Buffalo. What do you got, Tim?
I've got the Texans. They're really hot right now. They've won four straight. Haven't watched any of the games. Probably won't get to see the Texans at all this season. But I'm really not overly impressed by Rex Ryan's schemes. He's this defensive mastermind, but like he gets a little too clever. Like that Monday night game against the Patriots, they had them up on the ropes. I think it was the last drive of the second quarter. And, like, he called blitz five, six times in a row. Finally, like, on the last one, Brady just, he saw it coming and he burned him on it. So he's just a little bit too cool for school. I think I'm going to go with Houston. A couple coaching mistakes, maybe a turnover to swing the game for them.
All right. Weird. If you show Tom Brady the same look five times in a row, you might get burned on it. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
I agree. I like Houston. Houston is really hot right now. They've looked really, really good. And Buffalo has a way of this time of year starting to, disappoint their fans, unfortunately. I live near Buffalo, and there's a lot of Buffalo fans here locally, and they've had a long tradition of disappointing their fans, you know, when the fans thought they had a chance to make the playoffs. And so I find the way that history repeats itself, and I like Houston.
All right, well, I'm going to take Buffalo in this one. I'm going to buck the trend a little bit. I think
for what it's worth, Buffalo is
that?
A three-point game. Buffalo's
yeah,
three-point game.
Right, and I think a lot of it has to do with the defense, but now you're starting to hear some rumblings from Mario Williams and scheme and this and that, and I don't know. But I just get a feeling like this is going to be a game that Buffalo wins. They're an up-and-down team, and I think they get up on this one, and they go ahead and beat this. I mean, you know, I beat this Texans team in Western New York today. All right, Atlanta at Tampa Bay, the Falcons in free-fall mode against an up-and-coming Tampa Bay Buccaneers team. What do you got, Tim?
I'm feeling the Bucs today. Like you said, and Falcons are in free-fall mode. They looked amazing first 5 weeks of the season. They've just gotten worse and worse and worse. I think people make too big of a deal out of the quarterback matchup, but if you really look at that right now, Matt Ryan versus Jameis Winston, I've got to go with Winston because Ryan looks terrible right now. A couple weeks ago, the Indianapolis game, he threw three picks, and a couple of them, one of them was in the end zone. You're saying, what is he thinking? You have no idea what's going through his head and what reads he's making, so I just can't see them coming out of it right now. I don't think they could beat anybody right now, honestly.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent assessment. I can't really argue with it. Go ahead, Mike. What do you got?
Okay, so Atlanta's on a four-game losing streak that started with a home game against Tampa Bay that they lost 23-20. Now they're at Tampa Bay, and they're in free-fall mode. As we said, they have not played well. They have looked awful, and I have no idea why this is a pick game because it seems like Tampa Bay at home should be favored by a reasonable number of points. And that is why I am taking Atlanta, because everything else points to Tampa Bay, except I don't know what Vegas is doing, and normally Vegas makes money. And so I think a pick game is a sucker line. Everyone's going to take Tampa Bay at home as a pick game, and somehow Atlanta finds a way to win the game by outsmarting.
That is solid logic. Vegas usually does know what they're doing. And Atlanta gets Devontae Freeman today, something they haven't had really a lot of lately. So maybe he's able to recapture some of that early season magic. I am, however, going to go with Tampa Bay. I just feel like they are the better team of the two. I think Atlanta, you know, with Freeman and Jones, is pretty good on offense. But I like Doug Martin, Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, and the addition of Austin Seferian Jenkins for the Tampa offense. I think Winston has looked good. He doesn't turn the ball over. He hasn't looked a lot like a rookie quarterback this year. He's looked like a seasoned quarterback who knows what he's doing. And I'm honestly a little surprised by how well – I'm not surprised that he's good. I'm surprised at how good he's been. But I am going to take Tampa Bay at home. It's part of my reasoning is that because I think Tampa Bay is going to make the playoffs. And if they're going to make the playoffs, they're going to beat Atlanta today. Kansas City – Chiefs at the Oakland Raiders, another one for huge playoff implications. Tim, what do you got?
I think the weirdest thing about early on this season was how bad the Chiefs look. I think they started out 1-5 or something like that, and I just couldn't wrap my head around it. But there was a lot of close games. I think there's a few, like, if you remember Arizona won all those close games last year, that could have gone either way. The Chiefs were losing those games earlier this year, and right now they're red hot. Remember, they beat the Patriots and the Seahawks last season. I think they're much better than their record is, and I think that this is a team in the AFC nobody is going to want to face in the playoffs. I think they've got like a 78% chance of getting in there right now. Kansas City keeps on rolling. I like the Raiders. I really like what Carr is doing and his development, but I just can't see him beating Kansas City right now.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, it's much like I felt about Houston, this is just a situation where one team's playing really, really good football. It's Kansas City. Kansas City is 5-game winning streak. Kansas City hasn't turned the ball over in 5 weeks. And Kansas City gets an Oakland defense that is exploitable. And I think you'll find that Kansas City has another, you know, zero or low turnover game. And they're able to just grind them out. And I think Kansas City wins big, actually.
Oh, okay. I'm actually going the other way. I'm going to take Oakland at home. Again, I think they're a team that's going to make a playoff push, and I think if they're going to do that, they're going to have to beat the Kansas City Chiefs today. Kind of the same thing. I like Oakland. I think next year is really going to be their year to kind of really make a real push at the playoffs and probably get in. But I love Jack Del Rio. I think he's got to be in your conversation as coach of the year for what he's done here. He's really changed the culture there. These kids are really playing hard. I love Amari Cooper. I like Latavius Murray a lot. They've got some other wide receivers out there. Crabtree's look better than he did in San Francisco. I think obviously the Kansas City defense is a really good defense, but I think David Carr could be the difference in this game just because he's just a better quarterback than Alex Smith. Alex is what he is. He's again, doesn't turn the ball over, but he doesn't do anything spectacular either. So I'm going to take Oakland today. Indianapolis at Pittsburgh. Go ahead.
The last few weeks he has had some long passes. And I want to say, I do not appreciate you giving away the Bill Belichick Coach of the Year award to a coach other than Bill Belichick.
Okay. I appreciate that. Although I think it might be Ron Rivera's to lose at this point. Indianapolis at Pittsburgh. Indy and Pittsburgh both fighting it out for the playoffs. Indy really needs to win. I mean, they've done better with Hasselbeck, but they need to win to kind of hold off the Houston Texans, especially if the Texans win today like you said they were going to. Tim. So tell me, Indy at Pittsburgh, who do you got?
It's a must-win game for both teams, but I just think Pittsburgh is way too talented. Just look at the injuries they've had. Like, Le'Veon Bell goes down, you think, oh, they're screwed. DeAndre Williams comes in, he plays like a superstar. Last week, Richard Sherman shuts down Antonio Brown. They also limit Marquez Bryant. They get 200 yards from freaking Marcus Wheaton. I just don't know how do you stop this offense? They're too talented. They have too many weapons. There's just way too much talent there. And also, I think their pass rush is pretty underrated. That's going to be too much for Indianapolis' offensive line. So I think it'd be close. It'd be an interesting game, but I'm going to go with the Steelers.
I think it's actually super freaking Marcus Wheaton. Anyway, go ahead, Mike. What do you got this week, Pittsburgh or Indy?
Okay, so if I had to have a quarterback who wasn't Tom Brady on my team, he would be Ben Roethlisberger. He is the quarterback of all of the quarterbacks of this generation that does not get the credit he deserves. The guy is unbelievable. His numbers are great. He plays through injury. He's impossible to tackle. He's accurate. He has a big arm. He can make all the throws. Ben Roethlisberger does not get anywhere near the credit he deserves. And I like Pittsburgh a lot. You mentioned all those receivers. The common thread of all those receivers is Ben Roethlisberger is the guy that makes them great. He throws them open. He outthrows the defense. They're fast. They can basically run straight up the field, and he'll hit them in stride 3 yards past the back of the defense. And it's a consistent thing on a week-to-week basis. Yeah, give me Pittsburgh. Going away.
So things I've learned this year doing this show with Mike. One, he is a closet Pittsburgh Steelers fan. He loves Mike Tomlin. He loves Ben Roethlisberger. He loves those guys. He also likes beating them in the playoffs, which is what they do. But anyway, I am also taking Pittsburgh. I like Pittsburgh at home. I think Indy's been pretty good with Hasselbeck back there, but I don't love their defense. I don't love their offense. I don't like their offensive line. I think Pittsburgh, while they're not a supremely better team than the Indianapolis Colts, I think they are enough better to win a home game against the Colts, especially with all the weapons that Tim and Mike mentioned, especially that one big weapon back there, that huge quarterback that they have. As long as he stays upright, he's pretty good. Seattle at Minnesota. Tim Weaver, who are you picking?
Go Hawks. I have no analysis. You know, we hashed this over. I have no idea. I think it's going to be 50-50, coin flip, last-second field goal, accident. Also, I'm a classic, weird kind of game, but entirely biased. I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
All right, Michael.
Well, I think I told you earlier, I like Minnesota. And I like them because I just think Minnesota's really good. It's not really an indictment of the Seahawks. I think they're really good, too. If it was in Seattle, I'd take Seattle. I think a different animal shows up on the road. I actually will say I'm a huge Jimmy Graham guy. I think he's an excellent player, but I don't think he fits what Seattle wants to do, and I don't really think him being hurt is a huge deal for them. They're better off with another tackle. You know, just one more big, beefy guy at their line to give Wilson a little more time, open up running lanes. I think they'd just prefer to control the clock, run the ball, rather than have that flashy tight end, like what New Orleans likes to do, you know?
Right.
So I just don't know that he's a great fit, and I don't know that losing them isn't, in a way, a blessing in disguise to allow them to do what they want to do on offense. So I like Minnesota, but it's only because they're at home. I like the home team in this matchup, essentially.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I think if this was on the road, I don't know that Minnesota's ready to go into Seattle and win a game like that. But I think at home, I really like their chances just because, you know, Seahawks are a little bit more beatable on the road. And I really like what Minnesota has offensively and defensively. Tim, you talked about it earlier with Harrison Smith, but also Anthony Barr. They have a really good young defensive core there. And then now they've got Stephon Diggs, Mike Wallace, you know, some of the Kyle Rudolph has a really good tight end. Plus, they've got that one guy in the backfield who is apparently the second coming of Wolverine. The guy just does not slow down. The adamantium-infused Adrian Peterson, who is just ageless. I mean, he's ageless. So, and I really like – Mike and I talked about this. Like I told you earlier, we were on these guys early in the preseason. And basically it's because we really like Teddy Bridgewater. I think this guy's a really good quarterback. And maybe, you know, now this year with Adrian Peterson, he's been able to kind of even have a little more pressure taken off of him. And no one's really talking about him. But I think today's the day. I think it's going to be a fairly close game. But I think the home field advantage is going to come out and Minnesota's going to go ahead and win this one to stay one game ahead of the Packers in the NFC North. Wow. In week 13. All right. So, Tim, that's it. Good job. Way to go. Talk to us about cover32.com. Tell me what everyone needs to know about the site, about where they can find it. I'll obviously cover32.com, but what they can find there.
You can find my own work. I cover the Seahawks. That's cover32.com/Seahawks. And I also do the national pieces every day. I do our power rankings, our fantasy sleepers, quarterback rankings, all that good stuff you can find on the main site, cover32.com. I'm also an editor at FanSided talking about the Steelers. You can find all my work at timweaver.contently.com.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, follow Tim on Twitter at TimWeaver84, so that's pretty easy to find. I myself also am a writer at cover32.com for the Cowboys site. That's cover32.com/Cowboys. I do a weekly piece on why they will beat the team that they are playing that week. Whether or not that actually happens is another story. I am also at FanSided with TheLandryHat.com. So Tim and I are colleagues, and I do enjoy talking to Tim a lot, and I really appreciate you spending part of your Sunday morning with us, Tim. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. Tim. Anytime. We'll have him again for sure. Thanks, Tim. Have a great day.
You too.
So there we go. Tim Weaver. Pretty good stuff, Mike.
Solid show, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's a good guy there. So we got about 4 minutes left, which is usually not what we're doing. We're usually struggling to get out everything. So what do you want to talk about, man?
Well, college basketball, obviously. You know, I thought, transition to college basketball.
I think we just heard a bunch of clicks and have people clicking off the show because you just wanted to talk about college basketball. I would sit here and talk about ACC basketball all day. You don't want to talk about yesterday's game, though, right?
No, I can avoid talking about that.
Oh, so disappointing.
I'm going to have one season, man. It's all kidding aside. There's some good teams in the NCAA this year, as always. It's going to be intriguing.
I will say this. I saw one tweet yesterday from one of my friends who's back in Syracuse, and he, you know, Mike Hopkins obviously was coaching. Was he coaching yesterday?
Yep, that was his first game. Yep.
Okay, so the tweet said, if Hopkins does not get caught on camera picking his nose at least once, he can't get the head coaching job for sure. And for those of you who don't know, that's a Jim Boeheim trademark. He's constantly getting caught with his finger up his nose. But anyway, so we're not going to get into a lot of college football. I just thought that was really funny. So huge games today, okay? Huge games today. We already went over the six games that we picked today. It's a really big week for the NFL. There's a lot of teams still involved in the playoff hunt on both sides of the ledger, whether it's AFC or NFC. So this is going to be a big separation day. I think you're going to see some of these teams are going to lift, and obviously some of these teams are going to fall. So what do you think, Mike? I know you picked against.
I'll say that.
What's that?
The way the AFC breaks down right now is super interesting because you have New England and Denver and Cincinnati. They have all the wins. So those three teams are in. They're 10-1, 9-2, 9-2. Everybody else in the AFC is basically 5 or 6 losses. You have all these teams, and they're all in the same sort of stratosphere as far as they're all right, but they've got flaws, but they could beat you in a given week. So you got the Jets, the Bills, the Steelers, the Colts, the Texans, the Chiefs, and the Raiders all fall into that 6-5 or 5-6 realm. And so, as you said about separation, today's a big day for all those teams. And a couple of them who I think have a lot more sort of to offer going forward than the others are Pittsburgh and Kansas City. I think those are the two out of that group that come playoff time, you want no part of Pittsburgh. And if Kansas City can continue to not turn the ball over, they're dangerous as well.
Yeah, I totally agree, 100%. So there we are. Same thing on the NFC side. You got a lot of teams bunched up there, and they're gonna start playing each other more and more. You got all your divisional games are coming up at the end of the year. So here we go. It's buckle your seatbelts, kids. The NFL is headed towards the playoffs, and it's always exciting. But I agree with you. Kansas City, Pittsburgh, two very dangerous teams that people probably don't want to see in the playoffs. They certainly don't want to have the Kansas City Chiefs rolling into town. All right, we got 90 seconds left, so I just want to remind you, you can follow the show on Twitter at Assignment FBall. We tweet out what's going to come up during the week. If you're following us, you'll get an idea of who's going to be on the show, all that kind of stuff. You can follow Mike at Mastrolio123. You will get a fair dose of Syracuse Orange basketball from time to time. And you can follow me at Duckman4Real. That's Duckman, the number 4Real. And you can read all of my stuff at cover32.com/cowboys and thelandryhat.com. My normal Monday piece that I write for thelandryhat.com, which is what went right, what went wrong in the Cowboys game that week.
will not be on Monday because they play Monday, so it'll actually be out on Tuesday. So, but if you want to just have it automatically come to you, you can download the Fansided app on Google. If you're on an Android device, and you can just click on Dallas Cowboys as your favorite, and you'll get my story every week. Or you can download on Apple. We actually have a Landry Hat app on Apple, so go to the App Store and get that. I want to thank everybody for coming in. I hope everyone's having a great holiday season so far. We've got just a few weeks left till Christmas. Mike, enjoy your Christmas party today, and may the force be with you.
Thank you. Now, what I would suggest your readers do is go favorite the Patriots and then read your articles and troll the comments.
That's fine. You can do that as well. I'm not above being trolled. I just please read my articles. I get paid for it. All right. Thanks for everyone for joining us on Assignment Football, and have a great week. We'll talk to you guys next week. See you later.
Thanks, Tommy. Have a good one.